Own Hearts. I'm your host, Dr. Joyce Starr, author of Defend Your Condo and Homeowner Rights, and publisher of the first Homeowner's Defense Kit. Please visit my websites at starpublications.com, that's S-T-A-R-R, publications with an S, .com, or drjoycestarr.com, drjoycestarr.com, and of course, rightsradio.com. I want to welcome our inaugural Rights Radio sponsors. A warm thank you to MillionDollarPetPicks.com, home of the Make Your Pet a Star Pet Picks Time Capsule, where pet lovers celebrate their pets by giving them center stage and a corner of fame for all the world to share and enjoy. This family-friendly website delivers fun and information for pet lovers of all ages worldwide, including a special kids space and monthly giveaways. I also want to extend special appreciation to Sherry of Florida for her generous support for our efforts to put the spotlight on your homeowner and pet guardian rights. Our topic today, communicating with your pet in this life and in the afterlife. Madeline Walker, author of Exchange of Love, which is coming out in the fall of 2008, GatewaysToTheLight.com, teaches that our pets have often been with us through many incarnations. As lifelong friends, they have access to parts of our subconscious that we rarely access. Exchange of Love represents the one life form's ability to heal the other. Madeline is a healer, pet communicator, and a beautiful writer. Welcome, Madeline.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's so nice to speak to you.
Wonderful to hear you in England.
Yes, it's quite late in the evening in England, but it's been actually quite a nice sunny day today for a change.
All right, well, we have a very good connection. Let's hope it holds up.
It's and Madeline, I
want to begin by asking you, how did your pet healing and pet communicating career begin?
Well, it's quite a long story and a vertical learning curve for me because I used to be married to a veterinary surgeon and obviously in the conventional veterinary medicine field, and I worked as a veterinary nurse, and I've always been able to somehow just see imbalances in animals. But when I actually started hearing them talking to me, it was a complete shock, a complete surprise. I was cuddling a little Jack Russell puppy, and suddenly it's almost like it just looked at me straight in the face, and I heard these words in my head, and it said to me that it was a reincarnation of my friend who owned the puppy, of her old dog, and that it had come back to help her once again. And so that was two big whammies. One was, A, it was talking to me, and B, it was talking about reincarnation, and that was a bit of a shock. And from then on, it's just been a complete sort of vertical learning curve, and it's just been incredible journey.
Before we go into the journey, I'd like you to talk for a moment and share with our listeners your pet healing skills, because you've been a pet healer long before you were a pet communicator, especially with pets who've had former lives, and
yes.
Talk a little bit about what you've done on the healing front.
Oh, well, it's all sorts. I mean, I suppose it started, as the book talks about, a lovely goat called Mulberry, who was given to us. I used to breed and show goats, pedigree British Alpine goats, and Mulberry was given to us, and at the same time we had our little boy, Cameron, and they grew up together and had a very special relationship. And Mulberry had to have a cesarean. She had a very difficult kidding and had to have a cesarean, and goats really don't cope well with cesareans at all. And she was so ill. I sat up with her in the stable for night after night, and she was looking so, I thought that she was really going to die. And I just didn't know how I was going to tell my little boy that his favorite friend in all the world had died. And so I had done a very brief animal healing weekend, and I just sort of called in all the help I could think of and just asked to be shown where to put my hands to somehow try and help this lovely goat that seemed to be just fading away. And she was much more than just a goat. She was such a big friend to all of us. You know, she was such a character. And so I started to feel all this heat in my hands, and I placed them around her body and just did whatever I felt guided to do, and she pulled through. It took a while, but she came back, and she was just amazing, and I just felt so blessed to have been guided, and that was a big start, I think, of just trusting in my guidance and trusting that I could perhaps help with the best intention that I could, with my healing and love that I wanted to give out to the animals.
And how long were you involved in the healing before the realization came that you could actually communicate with animals in terms of their past lives?
I suppose about 4 years, but I was, again, working a lot with people as a therapist, helping people, and it's strange because it's in a full circle. I started working with people, just with people, helping them as a therapist, doing art therapy and sort of holistic stress management, that sort of thing. And then I did some animal healing, and then I sort of was very much focused on healing animals, and then now it's like the animals have shown me how they are, through me, are helping, trying to heal their owners, so they are trying to heal people, and so they're showing me so much more, a much bigger picture, which is just incredible. The more I work with them, the more I'm just so amazed at how much they know about us, how much they want to help us, and how they're flagging up physical issues with us, and emotional issues, and people call me out to see a horse, perhaps. The horse has always just dropped something into conversation telepathically with me, saying something like, well, ask them about their knee, ask them about an injury that they've had, maybe even before they had the horse. And the owners are so astounded that the horse knows that about them. And I said, well, they do this so they show us how in tune they are and how amazing they are. And it's just mind-blowing.
How can you give us a few more examples of animals that have spoken to you about their owner's problems, their owner's need to heal, or a former earlier experience that they need to address?
I've had horses that talk about their owner's relationships. I had a horse that was talking about her owner's relationship with it, and it appeared that actually it was a very abusive relationship. And the horse was showing me this, so I had to be very tactful as how I was going to present that to the owner. But the horse was saying that really she needed to get out of the relationship because it was dangerous and it was obviously disempowering her and it really wasn't good. So I had to find the right words to sort of say this is what the horse is talking about, and it really feels that it's unsafe and you really shouldn't be in this relationship anymore. And the good thing was that I got some feedback a couple of months later on that apparently the owner had actually left the relationship and was feeling a lot happier and was really going forward in her life. And so the horse had really, I think she was so shocked that the horse told me that actually it gave her the sort of motivation to do something about it, because obviously her stress and her anxiety and her tension was felt by the horse and was not helping their relationship in a way, because the horse was feeling all this tension and really wanted to help her. So it was a really happy outcome that the horse really helped her move forward in her life and actually become re-empowered and to walk away from this very destructive relationship.
What was her initial reaction when you told her this? Was she at first quite shocked or even angry, or she immediately embraced it?
Not angry, but I think quite shocked, because, one doesn't always realize that animals can say that sort of thing about their owners, that they know what's going on. Her partner had never come to stable, so he'd never been angry in front of the horse. So there wasn't really any obvious evidence that the horse would know what was going on. But, I mean, I had a horse that described her owner's car accident, described the car that hit her, everything. And then the horse said, I don't know what I'd do without her. I really wanted her to take care of herself. And the owner couldn't believe that the horse could describe the accident and the car that hit her, almost down to not obviously the make of the car, but the color and exactly what had happened within the accident. And obviously the horse was nowhere near the accident when it happened. This was just in the stable, miles and miles away. So she couldn't believe that the horse would know that. And she said, well, how does it know that? And I said, well, obviously the memory is in your energy field, and she was in quite a lot of physical pain and had quite bad injuries, so the horse was obviously very aware of that. But just amazing that they can just know this stuff. I just find it incredible, and that they're so committed to helping us, to try and address our issues and to be happier in ourselves.
You talk about empowerment in your book. You talk a great deal about empowerment, that the animals want to help empower us.
Yes.
Can you give a few examples of that?
Trying to think now. I think it's in everything that we do that they want us to be clear of our emotional issues that are limiting. It comes down to confidence issues. I mean, I had a little pony that talked about a little boy that owned this pony was really struggling at school because he didn't have any confidence, he didn't believe in himself. And this pony said that he needed to, when he had a test at school, he needed to think about the pony and that she would give him the confidence to believe that he could actually complete his test and do well and be successful at school. And so the pony just said to me, you need to tell him this and he needs to remember this and he needs to maybe take a photograph of me and with him. And so that's what the little boy did, and he got really good marks in his test and he started to really enjoy school and believe in himself and actually find himself. And his mother just couldn't believe it because she was obviously present at the session when I was saying what the pony was saying to the little boy, and she said, well, it's absolutely true. He does get very nervous. He doesn't believe that he can do things. He has no confidence. And since this has happened, the little boy is just flying, and it's just amazing. I'm just so thrilled that I could be part of that to pass on the pony's wishes, and just fantastic.
Well, how can animals who have passed over help their human companions who are suffering from their loss? And I imagine that people will be quite interested to hear what you have to say on this.
I think a lot of people feel guilt of some sort when they lose their animals, their pet. They can blame themselves for maybe thinking that they haven't done enough, or it can be such a hard decision, as I'm sure you know. If you have decided to have an animal put to sleep, it's such a hard decision. Even though you know it's the right thing to do, it's very, very hard. And sometimes people ring me and ask me if the animal is ready to go to pass in the spirit when they are struggling to make the decision. And that's a very difficult task for me to do because obviously it's so emotional. And I know from experience how horrendous that is and how devastating it can be. But the animals very often, I can communicate with them and they can reassure the owner that they're fine in spirit and that they're happy and that they can give evidence that they know what's going on still, and that they know that the owner did everything they could. And there's a passage in the book about a lady called Wendy with her old English sheepdog called Holly, and that was the most emotional session I think I had in a long time, because the owner got a new puppy and then suddenly felt incredible guilt, as though she thought, well, maybe Holly thinks I'm trying to forget her, and it was going really, really wrong, and she was so upset and so tearful the whole time. And so I went to see her, and Holly came through as a sort of a spirit energy and just directed the whole session and just said that she was absolutely fine and she was really happy about the puppy and just felt that the puppy had come to continue her work with her owner, Wendy. And it was just amazing. And it was so emotional. We all ended up in tears. But they were tears of joy because of what Holly was, this spirit animal, was saying. It was just incredible. And she just said that no one could have done more to try and help me. And I was a bit worried about saying that because I knew it was going to be very, very emotional. But telepathically, the spirit of this dog kept saying to me, you must tell her this, you must tell her that I know that she did everything she could and no one could have done more. And so I told her, and of course, it was very emotional, but the love that was coming through from this dog in spirit that was sitting with us was just overwhelming. It was just incredible. So I had to have a good cry as well, because it was so beautiful. It was so beautiful.
Well, what about the concept of animals reincarnating? That animal was speaking to you from beyond, but what about coming back as her next puppy?
Yes, well, very often animals show me what they will look like when they come back to their owners, and so they say, well, you know, you need to keep a lookout for, I don't know, a white kitten or a brown dog, and sometimes animals show me what they were like in the past life and how they've come back again. So I have a very special goat. Obviously, Mulberry was a very special goat, but I had another goat called Annika who was very, very special to me. And she's told me that she's going to come back as a cat because she wanted to really be able to curl up on my bed. And as a goat, she probably would have done if she had a chance to. She was so, so cuddly and so friendly, more like a big dog, really. And she said to me from spirit that she didn't really like having to stay in a stable at night, so she wanted to be able to come back as a cat so she could curl up on my bed. So I thought, yes, well, that would be perfect. So I'm really looking forward to meeting her again one day when she's ready to come back to me.
Do we travel in soul groups? You talked about that in your book. Are we traveling with our pets through time?
I feel we do. I've certainly always felt that about our human companions. I feel that if there's a very deep love connection, that transcends everything, and time is immaterial, really. I've always felt that we come back and to reenact various things, various roles that we have, and if there's anything that's unresolved in the past life, that we can come back and meet up with that person again and actually work through it, so we can resolve and move forwards and grow as a soul. And I think the animals, because if we have this deep love connection, they will come back to us to help us along that journey, as that puppy did. It has come back again to help my friend go forwards. And I've had so much evidence to prove that to me that I have no doubt about that now. And I find that very comforting because, as I said, it's so devastating when you have to lose your animal friend. To know that you are going to meet up again sometime is just, I just find that very reassuring and wonderful.
Of course, when you talk about humans reincarnating, the concept has been in many, many books that you will meet that person again, though you don't know really which life or when, or, it's a very distant thought. But the way you describe it in your book, that same pet that we hold so dear to our heart has been with us in so many lives and will be with us again in this life. So it's almost a soulmate in that sense, that it really
absolutely
travels with us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as we can have a soulmate, in a human, we can have soulmates with animals. Definitely. And I think Mulberry was definitely my son Cameron's soulmate, and continues to be so, even in spirit. I mean, he talks to all the time in spirit, and it's just wonderful because that's given him so much support and comfort at trying to cope with and learning to cope with grief and loss.
Well, you talk about something very important in your book, and that is what horses have gone through in wartime and some horrific scenes, and you've had some amazing conversations with the horses who've been through battle, and I'd like you to share that with our listeners.
And it's strange, as you just mentioned that, it gives me goose pimples. I'm just going goose pimply all over because it's such an important issue, and I believe that we have inflicted so much carnage on horses, throughout all our battles throughout millennia, and the very first case that I had of this was obviously a huge learning for me, was a horse called Woody. He was a big chestnut hunter, and he'd suddenly become really dangerous. He'd suddenly started to leap off grass verges and into the road, and it didn't matter if, lorries were coming or anything. He just had no concern about his safety. He would just leap in front, just go completely, become really unsafe. And so I was called in to go and see him, and he was very, very distressed, and he wouldn't really communicate with me telepathically at all. All he would say to me was, all I could get from him in my head was, I walked in badger's blood, and I thought, what on earth is he trying to say? And I thought perhaps he'd gone somewhere, there'd been a badger, they'd had some roadkill or something like that. And so I worked on his front hooves and tried to see if there's any sort of like fear energy stuck in his hooves. So I managed to do that, and then it just became so dangerous, I had to leave his stable. But as I left the stable, and I was just closing the stable door, he just said two words to me in my head, and what he said was the Somme, and my blood just ran cold.
And for our listeners who might not know what you're referring to, could you just explain that for a moment?
Right, well, the Somme was an area in France, in Normandy, where in the First World War they had horrendous battles and horrendous casualties of men and horses. I think in one battle 2 million were killed, men were killed, and it's just horrendous. And so when he said these two words, the Somme, I just thought, I knew what he meant. But he was so distressed he couldn't talk to me anymore, so I just left giving him lots of love and said to him, well, when you're ready you can talk to me, because I can also work at a distance. I can work from home and tune into animals. People can send me hair samples and photographs and I can still get information from them. I don't always have to see them physically. But anyway, he woke me up at 3 o'clock the next morning and started to talk to me about what had happened. And he said that his best friend was a horse called Badger, and they'd been pulling a cannon, and they'd been hit by cannon fire, and his best friend had been completely blown apart by the cannon fire. And it was just, what he showed me was so horrendous, so distressing. It was just really, well, awful. But I managed to sort of detach and try and work out the best way of helping him through all that, the best way of helping him to somehow go forwards. And so I went back to see him, and he talked some more about what's happened with Badger and just the whole sort of trauma of it all. And what happened was that I managed to bring the spirit of Badger in to talk to him, to show him that in spirit he was healed and that he was fine and he could be with him in spirit, and to bring him comfort. And he actually turned around and could see the spirit of Badger coming through to him in the stable. And that was, again, was just amazing. And as long as he can feel Badger around him and know that Badger's safe in spirit and everything is okay, he copes pretty well now. He's doing really well. But what I kept being shown more and more horrendous war scenarios with these horses that have had terrible, terrible injuries and were still carrying physical trauma and emotional trauma. One horse had had its head horrifically damaged in war, and in this lifetime it was incredibly sensitive and couldn't manage to have a bit in its mouth and was just terribly, terribly head shy the whole time. It had never been beaten or anything like that, but was still carrying all that trauma as it was reincarnated. It brought that trauma back into this life. So I asked my guidance, whatever you want to call my guides, why I was being shown all these horrendous things and these terrible, terrible injuries. And I was told that the horses were carrying the war consciousness of the planet, and they were reincarnating to try and help clear all that, to try and raise the vibration, to raise our awareness of just how futile and damaging it is. It achieves nothing except pain and agony and loss and grief, and really the horses are trying to transmute that. They're trying to help us to help ourselves, really, and so doing help the planet because of all the damage that the wars have done to the planet. So it's a huge picture, and I found that, well, just again mind-blowing that the horses are committed to go through all that and still come back and still endure problems in this lifetime to try and help us somehow. And the bigger picture of that, in that it's a way of healing and helping the planet, I just find astounding.
I think what's really very compelling about this is that if you think about it, there's no other animal that suffered more in wartime than the horse.
No, exactly.
But, right, and I don't think that the world at large has given much thought to the impact on horses for all those wars we've put them through. The Indian battles throughout the ages in the world, and
absolutely.
The horse has been the automotive force, so to speak, unwillingly.
Yes, absolutely. And I get horses that are still carrying injuries from the past, like at a sort of a cellular level, they're carrying the memory of that. I mean, I find horses that have got bullets in them and arrows and wooden stakes. From medieval battles, where the heavy horse, the only way that foot soldiers could stop the heavy horse attacking them, to run them down, would be to put these huge, great long wooden stakes in front of them. Of course, the horses would be ridden onto the stakes, and just horrendous. So, and swords and...
Why do they still love man? Why do they still love man? Why don't they hate mankind and humankind for what we've done to them?
Well, exactly. That's my biggest wonderment, is that they still have this compassion for us. That's what I find incredible. That, you know, we've used them as a vehicle and caused so much destruction to them, and yet, on that soul level, they're still willing to come back and help us. And that's what I find the biggest awesome message of teaching, that they, you know, we need to really learn so much from them, so much about compassion and forgiveness.
What's the impact on the planet in general of what you're learning and what you're teaching? What do you feel that we as mankind, at a very difficult time in our history, need to understand about the power of the animal?
Well, I think it is about honoring the planet, honoring nature, honoring ourselves. I think if we honor ourselves and honor all things, then I don't feel that we'd be so ready to go to war or to pollute or corrupt. You know, I think that's the biggest message, really. It's about respect and honoring and love. I think it just comes down to that the only thing that's really important is love, which is hence the title of the book.
Mm-hmm. Can anyone do what you've done? Can anyone develop the skill to communicate the way you've developed it?
I think so. I mean, I do run workshops to teach people how to do this for themselves. I mean, telepathic communication is innate within all of us. I think in the Western world we've become so programmed into material ways and quite conventional ways of thinking, that it just depends, I think, whether you're open to give it a try and to begin to trust yourself. And actually, some, you know, you learn a lot about yourself when you communicate with animals. You're actually learning to communicate with yourself. So it's about just being open and trusting and going with your guidance and sending out that love connection and running with it, really. So I think it's because I've been more and more open and been taught by so many incredible animals. I've been so lucky to meet such amazing creatures that have taken me on this journey. And so I feel I'm on a band to try and raise people's awareness of that and help people learn to communicate or remember how to communicate with nature, with all things, really.
Well, let's say that we were in one of your workshops. What would be the first 4 or 5 guidance steps that you might give to people who are attending your workshop in terms of learning how to communicate with their animals, both those are here and those that are gone? Or is there a difference?
I think it's about trust and always working, having that intention of working for the very highest good. I think if you're putting that intention out, that you're just doing it through pure love, from a heart energy place, I don't think you can go far wrong. And I'm sure from then on that things start to open up. And the first exercises that we do are usually about clearing our baggage, clearing our self-doubt, removing limitation. And so we'd start doing some visualizations along those lines. And then we'd have our first animal that we'd work with, and we'd all sit and just send out just a whole, like a thread of love, a cord of love from our heart to the animal's heart. And it becomes very powerful, very, very emotional. And it's a very experiential day that we'll usually run a 2-day workshop. And the first one, it incorporates learning to feel energy with healing energy. So we practice actually feeling energy. We practice dowsing with pendulums, because that's the way that I work as well. And we practice working with hair samples and photographs just to see whether we get anything. You know, we can get some... It's lots of fun, because some people pick up things that sound really silly, and when the owner's there... For example, I had a lovely lady who came to my workshop, and we had a dog. I forget the name of it, but it was a lovely dog. And a good question to start by to ask your animal is what's your favourite food? What do you like to eat? Because most animals enjoy their food. And I got fish in my mind, and I thought, oh, it's unusual for a dog to really like fish. And this other lady said, I'm getting fish cakes. And we all laughed, of course, because it seemed a bit silly. And the owner said, well, actually, she loves fish cakes. So she was absolutely right. And so, it's just trusting and going with what you get and just just trying, really, and being open and, as I say, just working on that love vibration.
In your workshop, are you all working? Sorry, it's we're going to have a bit of a problem here from time to time, those who are trying to listen, because of the connection to England. It's not as strong as we would hope, but we're here. And so my question for you is, are you all working on the same animal? Or are you working
an animal comes in, it could be a horse or a dog, and we all send it our love, and we all ask the same question. And again, we have to be very careful, very gentle, in that it could be quite a bombardment. Say there's, 12 people that are all trying to speak to this animal. But they seem to be able to send out fairly message to all of us. But what I have found in the workshops, is, especially with horses, is that they tend to come round to each person and give them a personal message, and that is extraordinary when that happens, and it's happened every time I've run a workshop with horses, that they actually have a personal message for each and every one of us. I had one chap who was very frightened of horses. He'd fallen off a horse when he was younger, and it appeared that he'd had a very bad past life. In fact, he'd actually died by being trampled by horses in a past life. But this one horse was so gentle and so quiet, and she walked up to him and just gave him so much healing. And I could hear what the horse was saying to him, and he was feeling it as well. He'd never, ever communicated telepathically, but this horse gave him such a clear healing message and told him exactly how to release that fear. He had to visualize lying in the bath and letting the water just wash away all his fear, all his past trauma, and just amazing. And the feedback I got from that student was that he'd done exactly as the horse had told him, and he'd had his bath and he'd washed away all his fear, and he was now working with animals and communicating really well and had no fear of horses anymore. And it was just wonderful because that horse healed him. It was fantastic.
So in other words, one animal per workshop, and the animal
we have several animals that we work on, but one at a time. So what we usually do is work on, we have usually schedule in two or three horses and maybe two or three dogs. We had some guinea pigs and a cat at our last workshop that we did. So it's usually about 3/4 of an hour to an hour for each animal. Just depending on how the animal is, and as long as the animal's happy with us working with it, it's happy to work with us, then we'll carry on working. So the day is usually working with animals, working on ourselves, working with healing energy, all sorts of things really. So it's one animal at a time, but I try to have a variety of animals in the workshop, because every animal has a different energy. The species feel very differently. A horse's energy feels very different to a dog's energy, obviously. So it's good to practice on all sorts of different animals, because they do feel very different. And it's really exciting to work on them, to feel how different they are, and just how amazing even a little guinea pig can be. And a little guinea pig can have huge healing potential.
Can you tell us about that, guinea pig feelings? That's cute.
Yeah, well, I had one student that had done her first day training with me, and she'd come back for a second training. And the minute she came into the venue, I could see that she wasn't right emotionally. Her energy was very down, and I could see by her expression that she wasn't feeling as sort of bubbly as she normally was. And I just said to her, are you okay? And she said, oh, I've been having some real difficult times since the last workshop, and lots of changes in my life, and lots of big decisions. And so she worked through the day, but she was very quiet. And in the afternoon, we had to work with these two guinea pigs called Dill and Rue. And I said, well, let's just, perhaps if you want to hold Rue and just have a cuddle and see what you can get from Rue. And we'd sort of shared them. They were very used to being handled. They weren't at all frightened. They loved being handled and cuddled by people, so that was okay. But I could see what Rue was doing. She had Rue on her chest, and I could see that he was working on her heart energy center and just giving her so much love. And as the guinea pig was, she cuddled the guinea pig for about 15 minutes, I suppose, and her whole energy lifted, and she started to smile, she started to laugh, and her whole aura seemed to be glowing, and it was all down to that guinea pig, and it was just giving her so much love and reassuring her and balancing her energy centers, and it was just amazing, absolutely amazing. And we got some good photographs of the guinea pigs because they were so cute, and that little guinea pig did such a good job. It was just wonderful.
Now, can we communicate with any animal? All sizes, all types? Is there a limitation?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a very profound message from a house fly landed on my arm, and normally if flies come near it, our immediate instinct is to swish them away, and I almost did that, and I thought, no, I mustn't do that, because it looked, if a fly can look intently, this one did, it seemed to fix me, hold me in a very strong, concentrated sort of look, and it said to me something like, you have such a big heart for everybody else, why don't you let yourself in? And I just thought, my God, that is so true, because I've been, you know, trying to think about everybody else and work hard for everybody else and not really maybe give myself enough love and attention. And this little fly was so right. And so I just said, wow, thank you. I was quite shocked because I didn't expect such a profound message from a fly, really. And it just looked at me and wiggled its legs and then just flew off again. It had delivered its message. It had done its purpose and served its purpose, and it had gone. And it was just left me sitting there thinking, wow, just amazing that even a fly can have a very, very profound message.
Well, what about your work with marine mammals? You visited sacred sites around the world. You've had some wonderful experiences.
I've just been so lucky, so lucky. I've met a lovely lady called Jacqueline Russell who runs these, they're called Wild Ocean Adventures, and she creates these wonderful trips where we can go and work with these amazing creatures in the wild. And I've been to the Bahamas with her to swim with spotted dolphins, and been to off the Dominican Republic swimming with humpback whales, which was just incredible, and been to Mexico, off Mexico, with whale sharks, and just the most incredible experiences, and I just feel so privileged and humbled that I've been, you know, able to do that. I'm going back to Mexico again in June to work with the whale sharks again, because they are just so amazing.
Why are they amazing?
And just incredible.
Well, why are they in particular amazing? Why did you, what did you sense from them?
They are just so huge. I mean, they can grow up to 60 feet long, and they are so gentle and so accepting, and they're just quite happy with you swimming along next to them. They don't mind at all. They're just really happy to be there, for you to be there with them. And I think we went with a very, very careful, very respectful team that went. We only allowed two of us to go in at once with any individual whale shark, and just to be very respectful and just swim alongside them and just to adore them, really, just to be in complete awe of them. I mean, the humpbacks were incredible as well, but quite often where we went, they just had their calves, so some of them obviously, understandably, were quite protective. We had one particular whale that was very happy for us to spend time with her calf, and that was memories that I will never, ever forget, but that was just such a special time. We were in the water for about 4 hours with this mother and calf, and the calf just kept coming round to sort of have a look at us and wonder what these weird things were in the water next to them, and just incredible. But I think the best encounters are the whale sharks, because they're just so so welcoming and so accepting. You just can swim alongside them, and it's just wonderful. And they're so huge and so gentle.
Did you receive any messages?
It was wonderful.
Did you receive any messages from these sharks and from the dolphins that fit within the overall idea of reincarnation and healing, etc.? I mean, clearly healing the planet, yes, but more than that, anything that was individual or personal?
Well, the whale again gave me lots of profound information about myself. I've been feeling a little isolated and maybe a bit like, well, you know, Am I just a bit nuts? Am I just a bit crazy? Because of all the things that I was seeing and feeling, and she just reminded me of that I seemed like I was a bit like an ant scurrying around on my own, wondering what just one person could do about all this to try and raise people's awareness and trying to help people understand just how amazing the animals were and what their profound message was for us. And she reminded me of how, you know, an ant just works as a part of a team for the anthill, and size for size has enormous strength and can move mountains. And so I had to really remember that I was not isolated, though. I was part of the whole, part of the planet, part of such a big thing. And that really encouraged me.
Your book is very powerful. I've read it, and it's beautifully written, magical language. And I think that you bring a very fresh and uplifting message to the world about the power of love from animals and the power of healing for them and from them. So I think what you've been doing is quite courageous. And yes, there are probably not many people doing it. The typical American is unaware of it. We've heard of dog whisperers and horse whisperers, but your message is going far beyond that.
Well, it is, and I feel so driven to, well, committed for the animal statement, and they're the ones that I've sort of promised I'm trying to, as in with, you know, talking to you, is to try and get that message out there for them, because so many animals are being beaten, they're being rehomed, they're being sold or even destroyed because they're displaying physical or behavioral problems that are just not being understood, and we're just not able to hear them or to listen to them, and there's always a reason for it. There's some wonderful animal behaviors, obviously, they're doing a fantastic job, but very often the animals are behaving that way because they're trying to flag up something in their owner that their owner needs to realize. And I get very often I get letters from people that are saying their dog's doing this and they can't stand it anymore. They're going to probably, you know, sell the dog or have it put down. And the dog is just doing it because it's got a very strong message for the owner. And when we get to the bottom of that and we can resolve the issue, the dog is just obviously doesn't have to display that behavior anymore. And so everything's happiness and light. And it's I just wish that I could reach as many people as possible to help the animals, because the animals are trying so hard to tell us something.
And, well, before we go any further, can you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, your websites, etc.?
Oh, well, I'd love to hear from your listeners, and if I could help, that would be wonderful. The main website for the animal healing is called, after the book, it's www.anexchangeoflove.com, and you can email me through there, and I'd love to hear from people and see if I could help, and I'd love to come over and do some workshops if anybody wants me to come over. That would be wonderful, to try and teach people, as many people as possible, that they can do this themselves and that they can really help their animals and help the animals, you know, around the world.
And people can send you a hair sample and a picture, correct?
Yes, they can send me, obviously if an animal is in spirit, they can send me a photograph and I can do my best to tune in and get messages for them. But if they have a problem with their animal that's still alive with them, then they can send me a photograph and a hair sample. And hopefully I can get some information and get to the bottom of any problems and help resolve them. And if there's anything that the animal wants to tell me about their owner to help their owner, then I can hopefully raise that with their owner and help them emotionally and perhaps physically to move forward in their life. So it's, so much more than just having a chat with an animal. It's a huge, huge picture that they're showing us.
Now, you're also, I understand, you're going to Mexico, and you're going to be doing some very interesting work there. Can you share it with us as well?
Well, I went to Chichen Itza. This was the last time I went to Chichen Itza, and this was after I was in with the whale sharks, and this one whale shark gave me some very interesting information to say that the pyramid of Chichen Itza could be connected to the Great Pyramid of Giza, because I've worked in Egypt as well on my own sort of spiritual journey. And it showed me exactly what I needed to do to send energy from the pyramids in Mexico to the pyramid in Giza in Egypt, and to create this sort of triangle of energy which would help with planetary healing. But I'm hoping actually to go back to France in October to go to the battle sites to help try and release some of the trauma of the spirits of the animals that have been killed there. Because I'm hoping to write another book called Deeper Exchanges of Love, and I feel that I really need to go and help some of the energy that's probably still held there as trapped energy from all that carnage. So that's something I feel that I need to go and do. And
are you also returning to Mexico?
I'm going to Mexico, yes, back in Mexico in June.
In June, and then you'll be working more on the pyramids in Mexico, the messages that you were given.
Yes, probably, yes.
Okay.
It just depends what I'm guided to do, what the whale sharks want me to do when I go back. I have to wait and see when I get in with them to see what else they want me to do, and I'll be directed by them.
Now, most people are directed by things on their calendar, and you're directed by the energy of animals.
Yes, pretty much.
I mean, how do you plan your day?
Well, obviously, you know, if I'm going to do a clinic, then I obviously have to make appointments, to fit as many people in or animals in that I can during the day. But as to traveling, then I obviously have to try and see all my clients in England, and obviously have to sort of plan a certain amount of to book flights, etc. But I always go with an open mind and an open heart and just see what happens and just get led to whatever I need to do. But I just feel that I'm guided to go wherever I need to go, and that whatever needs to happen will happen, that I will be put in touch with, or will meet the animal that needs to tell me what I need to know to help the other animals, the planet, whatever I need to doing. So I never know what to expect, because I have to be open to anything, and anything can happen.
Well, that's quite a journey.
Yes, absolutely.
In other words, your schedule is determined by animals you've not yet met.
Yeah, pretty much, yes. Pretty much, yeah. So that's exciting.
Are you aware of others in the United States who are doing what you're doing, or is it really quite unique in the world? Where do you stand in relationship?
There are some wonderful communicators in America.
Mm-hmm.
There's Martha Williams, who's a wonderful communicator. She's written some wonderful books. And there's a lovely book called Animal Voices, which is written by Dawn Bowman Brunk, I think you pronounce it. And she's done a collection of cases of different animal communicators that she's connected with. And I think I'm right in saying that when she started writing the book, she was a little bit skeptical. But through writing the book and hearing all the stories and meeting all these wonderful people, she then became a communicator herself. And she is very much talks in very similar ways to the way that I do. And maybe not quite so much of the past life stuff, but still very much about the power of the animals and the message that they have for us. And just their awesome healing and compassion that they have.
Tell me, do they have compassion for the fact that we allow and put to sleep, some would say up to 10 million, the figures range between 4, 7, 10, one is never sure how many, but we do know that millions of homeless animals and feral cats and dogs are put to sleep every year. How do they feel about that?
Obviously that's very distressing on a human level, but animals do have a much better understanding of death and dying than we do. They do have a much clearer view of the afterlife than we do. Not all, obviously, but mostly they feel that it's just part of their journey. It's a chance to incarnate, to do what they have to do to be here, and they can move on. They can choose to come back again, or they can choose to just be pure energy. I have a dog that I lost called Pillow that I was devastated to lose her. She got hit by a motorcycle and killed. And I know she's around me because she helped me finish the book. She helped me. She woke me up in the night reminding me that I hadn't told a story about a particular animal to illustrate a point. And I need to write it in this way. And just talk about the language that I use. The animals told me how to write it. They gave me the words. But she has told me from spirit that she likes being in spirit. She likes being a pure energy. She feels that she can travel more, she can do more on a healing level, just as pure energy. So although it is very distressing, and I'm sure that quite a few maybe haven't met the people that they were perhaps meant to meet to help, but again, it's raising people's awareness, because perhaps we can really look at those figures and look at what we're doing to these animals.
Well, and my feeling is that perhaps by helping those animals, we're raising the energy level and the aura, so to speak, of the country. And
absolutely.
That's just our country.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why the animals are doing this. It's why, you know, they're trying to alert us to this, so we can raise our vibration as a race, but to help the whole planet. It's such a big picture.
What about the abuse of animals worldwide? We talk a lot about the United States. We're talking about England. But even so, there's a fair awareness and certainly a love of pets in the United States. But what about worldwide?
Well, again, it's part of the journey, and it is very, very hard. Hopefully it's by them enduring this that people are beginning to notice and beginning to try and implement rescues, implement awareness of a lot of people abuse their animals because of through ignorance. They don't realize that perhaps their animals have emotions, that animals have feelings that they need to even think about it. And so I think the more we can raise people's awareness and educate people that they realize that actually they are damaging these creatures, that these creatures do have feelings, they do have emotions, all we can do is to just keep trying our best to work to help them. And that's the whole point of the book and my work and so many other wonderful people that are trying to do the same sort of thing in their own particular way. And so maybe the animals that are enduring this for that very reason, to somehow get our attention so that we can actually educate and teach people and to stop this. It's like when I went to, in a lesser scale, because I went to the Marine Center in the Dominican Republic and saw the dolphins captive, and they were doing these displays for all the tourists, and I stood and watched the display, and just the tears running down my cheeks, thinking, having worked with wild dolphins in there, and just the privilege of actually being acknowledged and interacted with wild dolphins that choose to come and play with you when they've got the whole ocean to swim in, is such a privilege. And to see them forced to do these shows and to interact with the tourists. But what they told me was that actually that was a way of reaching more people that would normally not even think about a spiritual aspect of an animal, but actually on some deep level they were able to connect with so many more people because they'd chosen to have that lifetime of captivity to get that message of somehow into the subconscious of these ordinary people that probably wouldn't even consider anything that we've been talking about as being important, that they could reach them and touch them somehow on some level.
We see on Animal Planet a new show about monkeys that have been rescued from the wild, not from the wild actually, from incarceration.
Mm.
They've been held captive in the most terrible way possible, some in a cage, a small 4-foot cage, for many, many years. Why would an animal choose to go through such a horrible life?
Because they have so much compassion within them, on a big soul, on a higher soul level. They have so much to teach us and so much to teach us about forgiveness that they can choose to incarnate into that kind of horrendous lifetime. It's all about the bigger picture and the soul journey. You can't imagine why anybody or any animal would choose to do that, but because they are such special beings, that they can choose to endure that for what we need to learn.
What about their hearts? We have broken hearts. We have certainly, our hearts are broken when we lose them. But are animal hearts broken? Can they be broken by, for example, in Katrina, when their owners left them with, literally high and not very dry?
Mm. I think, well, definitely, I do work with a lot of grief with animals. They obviously are experiencing their emotions a bit like we do. We don't always remember that we've chosen this particular incarnation for what we need to learn. We get very bogged down in our emotions and very weighed down by the limitations that we put on ourselves. So it's only natural for us all to feel grief at loss. And so sometimes there are animals that are just holding so much grief. I have a lot of horses that are holding a lot of grief from having a very traumatic weaning from leaving their mothers. Even old horses can still be holding a lot of grief from a very traumatic weaning, and so I have to help them release that and help them move forward and help them actually with their forgiveness of the people that mistreated them. So it's, yeah, obviously they can, like Woody losing his friend in that past, like he was carrying that broken heart through lifetimes, kind of different incarnations, and he actually incarnated this time still with a broken heart.
Well, I want to thank you, Madeline. We've come to the close of our show now, but if there's ever been a heart healer of animals and pets, it's Madeline Walker, and I do hope you'll read her book as soon as it comes out in the fall. We'll be alerting our visitors and our clients to your book, and I'm very excited to share what you're doing with everyone who's listening to this show. So, Madeline, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for allowing me to talk about it and to maybe spread the word for the animals' sake. And I just feel so grateful. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, signing off now for Rights Radio, that's Joyce Starr, and thank you for joining us today.